Chapter 1. The Track. There's a rhythm to flying in turbulence. The aircraft sways, lifts, settles, breathes. You learn to move with it, not against it. A KC-135R isn't elegant, but she's steady. If you respect her, she returns the favor. I was prone in the boom pod, chin on the padded rest, hands resting lightly on the controls. After 10 years in maintenance, and now 10 years in this seat, the movements are instinct. My father used to say, "Feel the tension before it snaps." He meant bolts, steel, tempers. It works just as well on aircraft. I'd always wanted to fly, but I was too late to the game. Being a boom operator was the next best thing. Treated like an officer, without the responsibilities of leadership, able to avoid squadron politics. Below us stretched the Yemeni desert. Just blackness. No horizon. No depth. The kind of dark that feels more like an idea than a place. "Boom, pilot," Rourke said over the interphone, voice low. "You good back there?" "Good," I answered. And I was, as long as everyone else stayed steady. Rourke flew differently than any pilot I'd worked with before him. He didn't come up through the normal Air Force pipeline. He'd flown Apaches for the Army first. Gunship pilot, low altitude, desert heat, rotors cutting sand-thick air. He knew what it felt like to fly close enough to see the whites of someone's eyes on the ground. He carried that same close-range awareness into tankers. He didn't just operate airspace. He hunted its patterns. Calculated silence. Intentional stillness. People say he's calm. No, he's survivor calm. The kind learned after the day the sky went to hell, and he could only bring half a flight home. He never tells the story. He doesn't have to. Some things you can hear just by how a man breathes. We were running the same refueling track we'd worked for weeks. Same altitude. Same emptiness pressing in around the cabin. I keyed the radio. "Dude 2-1. Shell 6-1. Cleared pre-contact." The night shifted. Motion separated from the dark. The F-15E Strike Eagle eased into view. Precise closure. A pilot who trusted the night and himself. I knew that rhythm. I knew that jet. I didn't even need the call sign yet. I spoke quietly to Rourke, not on the radio, but on the interphone. "Lawson and Keene?" He didn't respond, but he absorbed it. That's the Apache in him. Every input is battlefield geometry. Nothing wasted. Lawson's voice came back across the frequency, carrying the Carolina drawl I remembered from a sagging couch at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. He showed me pictures of his newborn daughter, like he was still surprised she existed. Keene laughed like sleep was a luxury they'd forgotten how to afford. I eased the boom. "Well, I'll be damned," Lawson said, not quite formal. "Mac, that you on the boom tonight?" "Could be." "That you or the evil twin who still owes me coffee from Goldsboro?" "That was me. Coffee was bad anyway." Keene keyed in, lighter than the desert air deserved. "Mac, your kid ever finishes that Lego tanker, what was it, KC-10, right?" He knew exactly what he was doing. Rivalry is tradition, especially between KC-135 crews and the Gucci Boy crews of the KC-10. Lawson eased the Strike Eagle into the refueling envelope, as if he had done it hundreds of times. His control over the fighter demonstrated elegance, like watching a ballet. The receptacle of the F-15 sits at the wing root on the left side of the aircraft, a stark difference from any other pointy-nose aircraft in the area of responsibility, AOR, where the receptacle lies on the center line. It almost looks as if the fighter pilot is off-center. And he is. A slow extension with my left hand gently eased the boom into the receptacle. Contact. Fuel transfer began. The aircraft hummed like a heartbeat. 3,000 pounds, Chen called. 4,800? 6,300.